Morning to you. Big news day. Lots going on. I guess the biggest headline is sports gambling now legal, or states can make it legal if they wish, thanks to the Supreme Court.
7-2 decision, I think it was.
And New Jersey will be first in line.
Absolutely.
They say by Memorial Day.
Wow.
Down at Monmouth Park. Clearly, I think James Corden made a good point last night on the Late Late Show on CBS.
Some big Supreme Court news today. The highest court in the land has struck down a federal law that banned sports gambling. So now it's going to be legal to bet on sports. Then every sports fan in America was like, oh, good, we can start betting now.
Well, that's true. I mean, sports gamblers are rolling their eyes saying, oh, what's the big deal?
Yeah, exactly.
Although this is, now, what do you think, make of this tweet? At our show Twitter feed, at Len Michael W.O.R. Raymond tweeted, he said, gambling is a disease. Taxes generated will be misspent and squandered by our incompetent and corrupt so-called political leaders.
Well, he's got a point there. I don't think that's tough. That's a tough one to argue with. So, you know, I'm going to be curious. We've got Governor Chris Christie coming up to talk about the legalization of gambling. I'm going to be interested to see the toll it takes on the mob, on organized crime, which has made gazillions of dollars over the years with betting being illegal.
Well, has it been determined what these states legalizing marijuana have done to illegal drug people?
The issue with the mob on sports gambling is you can still probably bet with the illegally if you don't want to have any tax ramifications.
Also, right. You're supposed to get better odds, maybe?
You may, where? With the mob?
Know. With the mob, I don't know.
Well, they don't have any. Yeah. I mean, the only vig is the one they're getting.
And also, if you don't have any money to bet with, you can go to the mob.
Well, that's
to
the
get
other
some
thing.
Money to bet with.
That's the other thing.
They'll loan it to you.
Yeah.
I just have my doubts.
They went up the bottom of a river, but
I have my doubts that this puts any dent in the mob. And also, you know, Michael, a listener, Michael, tweeted us earlier. You know, how did that all work out with all that money from the state lotteries going to education? How's that worked out exactly? Hasn't worked out great. So I do have my doubts. Anyway, our big three stories, obviously the sports gambling. Also in the big three, we're going to Jerusalem in just a couple of moments. 58 reported dead in one report in the Gaza violence, over 2,000 injured as the U.S. opens the Jerusalem embassy. And rounding out the big three, Melania Trump undergoing kidney surgery, and they kept that one pretty hush-hush. Mm. They say she's doing fine, and coming up in about 21 minutes, we'll have Michael's personal men's tickets for you to call in and win. And with that, let's go to ABC News in Jerusalem. And once again, welcome in Jordana Miller. Good morning over here. Good afternoon there. What's the latest, Jordana?
Hi, Len. Tensions continue to be quite high here. It is Nakba Day. That's the day the Palestinians mourn what they call the disgrace of the founding of the State of Israel. They typically take to the streets. And today we are expecting them to do that in just a short while here in East Jerusalem and the West Bank and Ramallah and along the Gaza border. Of course, passions running high and anger running high after the events of yesterday, those deadly clashes with the Israeli security forces. Some of the funerals have already taken place here. The death toll now up to 61.
Wow. I didn't know.
Jordana, critics of Israel say that their response to the uprising in Gaza has been disproportionate. Could they not have used tear gas or something like that? Why did they just shoot to kill?
Michael, the Israeli army says that they used a lot of tear gas as well as having... They say they had to resort to live fire. And that's because they say that while thousands of the Palestinians that showed up yesterday were peaceful in the back of the protest, there were many in the front that approached the security fence. There were a number of incidents. Remember, there are about 10 to 12 different spots where the Palestinians are protesting along the Israeli-Gaza border. And along some of those spots, the army says groups came and tried to breach the fence, damage the fence, tried to lay explosives, throw explosives, fly kite bombs in, burning tires. There were a couple incidents of Palestinians opening fire, gunfire across the way to the Israeli soldiers. So The Israeli army, backed by the prime minister and the defense minister, say that Israel followed its guidelines that it shot when it felt that either the fence was going to be breached or the lives of Israelis were going to be endangered. There were plenty that were, unfortunately, there were also plenty that were shot below the waist and in the legs. More than 1,000 reported injured just by gunshot wounds. So this was really an unprecedented day of violence that one we haven't seen in really since the 2014 Gaza war.
Jordana, I mean, the word is that Jared Kushner will be presenting his peace plan in the near future. I just sit here over here in the United States and saying there's just no chance there'll ever be peace there. I mean, you're stationed in Jerusalem. What are your thoughts?
I think it's going to be a very long shot for the White House if they believe that putting a peace plan on the table right now would even be read, let alone approved of or engaged in by the Palestinians. The Palestinians have made it clear that they are boycotting the Trump administration for now over the president's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and what an outgrowth of that, which was the move of the U.S. Embassy yesterday. The Palestinians have been clear that at this point they're going to seek ways in the international community through the U.N. and other forums to try to advance their national aspirations. And it doesn't look like anytime soon they will turn to the United States. The question is how long they can keep that strategy up for, really. Because in the end, if the Palestinians care about their own interests, they're going to have to try to negotiate at some point. Are they going to stall the Trump administration for the next, 3 years? And then what if President Trump gets reelected? Then what?
Jordana, Benjamin Netanyahu has been under fire in his own country, a kind of a polarizing figure. But has this decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, has that helped him in the polls and helped him in with the Israeli people?
That's a great question. It absolutely has. The recent polls just from a couple of days ago show that Netanyahu's Likud party, which has currently 30 seats, would pick up 5 more seats. To 35. I mean, the Israeli public sees him as really the facilitator for this decision, even though, reportedly the president was leaning towards moving the embassy towards to Jerusalem and recognizing Israel as the capital, recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Israelis believe Netanyahu played a central role in making that happen, and he is basking in the political victory of this. It's a triumph of his now, 9 years in office. And the public is likely to repay him handsomely during the next elections.
Interesting. Jordana, any concerns about suicide bombers in Israel itself as a result of this decision?
Well, Hamas is now vowing to take revenge on Israel for the, more than 60 Palestinian protesters who were killed yesterday. And Hamas, one of their hallmark tactics is to carry out suicide bombings. We haven't seen it in a very long time, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't try to reintroduce it. And Hamas has a number of cells that operate in the West Bank, as well as in Gaza. So that will certainly be a concern in the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah. All right, Jordana Miller, thanks so much. ABC News correspondent in Jerusalem. Stay safe, Jordana.
Thanks, Len. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Jordana.
You and I have both been there, and we see the obvious dichotomy from what goes on in Israel. You think you're in Silicon Valley with all the beautiful buildings and Microsoft and Sun. See all the tech company, and then you look across and people living in tents over there on the other side, and I just don't know how they're ever gonna have peace over there. I don't mean to be that pessimistic, but listen, how many years has this been going on for?
It takes two to make a peace treaty, and the Palestinians seem to have no interest in making a peace treaty with Israel. And you know what I think the Israelis' attitude is? fine. We have a great life here. They can rot there behind the wall in Gaza. Let them rot.
You know,
life
some,
goes on.
Some organizations are painting Israel as the heavy here.
Yeah,
some
all those anti-Semitic organizations, well, some, like the New York Times.
Yeah, well, the Times has come under fire for some of their headlines.
Oh, yeah.
Israel kills all these people.
Oh, they have a thundering editorial against Trump and Israel in the paper today.
Well, and White House spokesperson Raj Shah yesterday made it very clear that this is clearly Hamas's fault for getting these people. It wasn't a peace. Let's just put it this way. This was not a peaceful protest. They were trying to storm the wall. They had objects. There was stuff going on.
Yeah, completely. You know, and the problem here is I think that a lot of people on the left, Len, I'm not saying you, but a lot of your lefty cohorts, they instinctively identify with the oppressed. And they now see Israel as this oppressive state because it's oppressing the Palestinians, where once upon a time the left was in favor of Israel because Israel was practically defenseless there in the Middle East, clawing and carving out a country for itself. But the tables have now turned, and Israel is now the heavy.
Trust me, you and I have both been to Israel. I don't care if you're left or right. If you've been there and you see how they're surrounded by enemies and how they're what they've made of themselves out of the desert, the Negev desert, now they've built a country and a culture. You're not going to lump me with a lefty who's going to sympathize with the oppressed people of the Palestinians. That's not going to cut it with me.
Habanagelia.
It's Habanagelia.
Habanagelia.
And do the horror.
Habanagelia.
You're going to do the horror at the royal wedding Saturday.
I
guarantee you. Well, coming up next, we have lots of airplane news. The real story behind MH370. This makes a lot of sense to me. You have harassed flight attendants, and you have naked passengers. So we have all these different airplane stories. This is true. Plus, we want to give you a grand, and that next chance is at 9:05. Also, Mark Simone comes up at 10 o'clock right here on 710 WOR. So after 9/11, did you live in Lower Manhattan, work there, go to school there? Did you help with rescue, recovery, cleanup, or construction near Ground Zero? So two questions for you. Were you in Lower Manhattan below Canal Street between September 11th, 2001 and the summer of 2002? And two, have you been diagnosed with cancer? Well, if you answered yes to those questions, you may be eligible for compensation. Call attorney Noah Kushlevsky, the New York lawyer who's established himself as the go-to guy with the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund. He's recovered over $1 billion for clients affected by the World Trade Center attacks. He's here to help. Just look him up. Check out how many cases over $1 million. Noah has resolved over 400 of them, $400 million cases. So if you're a student or live near Ground Zero or work near there below Canal Street after 9/11 and now you have cancer, call him. Call 888-974-3125 or go online to groundzerocancer.com. That's groundzerocancer.com or call 888-974-3125.
Good morning, everybody, at 8:25 on Tuesday. Now, here is, Len, a story. It's chilling, but it is a brilliant piece of aviation detection. You remember that Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 that just completely disappeared
in the
Indian Ocean?
Yeah.
They found a couple of pieces of debris, but that was all that they found. It was like it just went into the Bermuda Triangle out there, right? Well, some aviation experts have determined that the captain, his name is Zahari Ahmed Shah, more than likely committed suicide. That this was
a murder and suicide.
This was a deliberate attempt to ditch the plane, and they figured it out because he chose a flight path that kept him invisible on radar. He was going in and out of the border of Thailand and Vietnam. So the people in Thailand say, well, here's a plane, it's in our airspace. Oh, no, it's not in our airspace anymore, so we have to worry about it. Then the Vietnamese people say, oh, here's a plane in our airspace. And then he crossed the border again and say, ah, now it's no longer in our airspace.
He had this all figured out. Huh?
He had this all figured out. And apparently he diverted the plane, and he went over his hometown of Penang, sort of maybe they think as a goodbye, and then flew way off course and put the plane down. Now, it did not apparently nosedive and completely shatter when it went right down to the ocean. Because the debris they found, they would not have been able to find if the plane had been totally destroyed. So he may have just landed the plane in the middle of the Indian Ocean, killing himself and all the passengers on board. And they think the plane is at the bottom of the sea, probably intact, and this was a suicide murder mission.
So just think of those passengers who
Would they have even known what was going on?
Yeah, the plane is getting lower and lower and lower and lower and lower.
Well, he probably would have had to have done something to his co-pilots because they would have fought him if he was trying to ditch the plane.
That's,
so
that's
we don't know
point.
what on the cockpit. Yeah. But this has happened before. Remember, there was the pilot in Germany who suicide murder crashed the plane into the Alps deliberately.
That's correct. So,
but this is a remarkable piece of aviation detection, I thought.
And who came up with the theory?
It is a fellow by the name of Larry Vance, a former senior investigator with the Transportation Safety Board of Canada.
Wow. So, speaking of flights, does this surprise you? A headline from CNN Money. 68% of flight attendants have been sexually harassed.
No.
I guess not.
No.
That shouldn't be surprising.
Doesn't
more, more than a third of those respondents to the survey saying they experienced verbal sexual harassment from passengers within the last year. According to the president of the American Flight Association, this is Sarah Nelson, says it's a silent epidemic that airlines for years always sold sex as part of their appeal.
Sure.
Sex in the air. Flight attendants describe verbal harassment as nasty, dirty, and unwanted. They said passengers would proposition them, tell them sexual fantasies, request pornographic videos and pictures.
My God.
The lady here said, I used to be cornered in the back galley and asked what my hottest layover was. when I started flying, I was always asked, was I a member of the Mile High Club?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Some of the flight attendants said they were groped, grabbed, and slapped above and below their uniform. Some of them said they were followed, cornered, or lunged at, hugged, kissed, or humped. But only 7% said they actually reported the incident.
I wonder why.
I don't know either.
Remember the old phrase, coffee, tea, or me?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm, you know.
But do you remember that story we had the other day? A British airline hostess, she says that some of the airline attendants work on the side as prostitutes, that they actually proposition the guys in first class and make arrangements to meet them later as a way to pick up some extra bucks.
We don't fly enough, Michael. Too busy landed here doing a radio show.
I know. I'm on a frequent flyer mile.
Was this you on Alaska Airlines?
No, this was not me on Alaskan Airlines. But apparently, a naked passenger was tackled and detained on an Alaska Airlines flight from Seattle to Anchorage. Former state senator Johnny Ellis said on Twitter that the incident happened Monday after the man ran from the front of the plane to the back, yelling and waving. I hope it wasn't the pilot. What would possess some guy to take his clothes off and streak the plane?
It's called alcohol or drugs.
Yeah,
which
that is probably
what did they determine?
You know what? We may get to a point where they should stop serving alcohol on planes because this bad behavior is getting out of control.
Well, if 68% of flight attendants, don't you think that the alcohol has to do with a lot of that?
No question about it. So here it comes.
Put it in the books! There you go. Put in the books, Michael.
I haven't put in the books in a while, but I'm hoping. Now is your chance to win my personal pair of tickets to see the Mets take on the Marlins on May 21st at Citi Field. If you are caller number 14, be caller number 14 at 1-800-321-0710. That's 1-800-321-0710. If you are number 14, you're the winner. Purchase tickets at Mets.com/tickets.
Good morning to you, everyone. At 8:41, wherever you're listening in the tri-state area, got an email from Christopher. Loves the iHeart app, listening to us in North Carolina. He's on a business trip. So
terrific.
Thanks for listening on the app. There's a great advertisement for our free iHeart app. And we got a winner for to your personal tickets, right, Michael?
Congratulations to Phil Lynch from Hewlett, New York, who won my tickets to see the Mets take on the Marlins on May 21st at Citi Field.
All right. Tonight, coverage begins at 6:05. Mets and Toronto Interleague play at Citi Field. Noah Syndergaard on the mound for the Mets. Ask me something, anything at all.
How is Syndergaard doing now?
That's a great question.
That's the voice of Jordana Miller. We've had her on several times from Jerusalem.
She's good, yeah.
And invariably, Riedel will ask something, and her response is...
That's a great question.
And she never says that to me, and I'm developing a complex. I think I asked some good questions.
What she usually says is, that's a great question, Michael. You cut out the Michael part. That's a great question, Michael.
She didn't say Michael today.
Well,
or we would have left it in there.
She usually says, that's because she's got a little note card in front of her.
I think she has a little thing for you.
Tell him it's a great question. No, I happen to know quite a bit about the Middle East. I've been there a number of times.
Get out of here.
Well, there has to be a reason why they've never met.
Yeah, no, she thinks my questions are perspicacious.
What does that mean?
What?
It means sweaty. No.
What?
Perspicacious.
It means insightful.
You ever write that in
you
your column?
Too many words.
No, I also used another word today. Exacerbate.
Well, I know
what do you think that means, Len?
I know that word.
I know what you think it means.
Exacerbate
not what you
the situation.
Exacerbate. Yeah. Yes.
That's not what Fagan sang in Oliver. He was reviewing the situation.
Right.
He was not exacerbating the situation.
And exacerbating does not make you go blind either.
You know what, Michael?
That's a great question.
By the way, Michael, you must have done very well on your SAT.
Oh, he did. He went to Columbia.
Not the math part. Not the math.
Graduated cum laude. Magna cum laude.
What are you
part.
Doing in radio? Yeah. Too smart for radio.
You really dumbed down here. Columbia Phi Beta Kappa. You doing this?
After 11 weeks, it's finally dawned on me.
Well, so what do you? Boy, aren't you surprised in that leaky sieve White House? They kept the Melania surgery so quiet. Nobody knew until it was done.
No leaks in the first lady's office, apparently.
Right.
I wonder if Trump even knew she was going into the hospital. Maybe why
it
didn't leak. No.
I'm leaving. I'll see you later. Maybe she doesn't even say see you later.
I'm out if he had done.
Anyway, Vice President Pence had some thoughts.
As people across the country and this world have come to appreciate, Melania Trump is a remarkable woman, and the United States of America is blessed to have her as our first lady. So get well soon, Melania.
Yeah, I agree. I'd rather have her than Stormy Daniels as our first lady.
Well, let me think about that. You know what?
That's a great question.
Now, the president tweeted out a few minutes ago that she'll be home in 2 or 3 days. Jimmy Fallon had his little joke last night. You know, they said to Melania to go home in 2 or 3 days. She said, why rush it?
I need some recovery time here. She'll have physical therapy and that'll be away from the... But apparently there's no truth to the rumors that they were living apart in the White House. I mean, they are technically but...
They do apparently sleep in separate bedrooms.
You know, I
Because
have to
when
say,
Sean Hannity calls, you don't want to interrupt her,
exactly.
her beauty rest.
I have to say, I do feel sorry for her. She's been thrust into a role I'm sure she did not want. She does not seem comfortable in the spotlight. She did not certainly sign up to be first lady of the land. And I'm sure, like everyone else, she thought her husband had no chance of winning the White House. And here she is in a difficult role, but I think she's acquitting herself well with class and with dignity.
And her approval ratings are sky high. You know, they're certainly a lot higher than her husband's.
Absolutely. So
now, the White House press spokesman yesterday for the briefing was Raj Shah, and he kept coming back to the same theme over and over again when asked about the White House aide who said it doesn't matter what John McCain thinks because he's going to die soon. So Raj Shah kept coming back to the same thought when the press corps kept hounding him about, is there an apology forthcoming?
This is an internal matter. It's being addressed internally, and I don't have anything further to add.
And he must have repeated that 7 or 8 times.
If you aren't able in internal meetings to speak your mind or convey thoughts or say anything that you feel... without feeling like your colleagues will betray you, that creates a very difficult work environment. I think anybody who works anywhere could recognize that.
So what do you think? As a
unshakable Raj.
Do you think we're making too much of this, the media, including you, Mr. Riedel?
I think that the White House should apologize. It was a tasteless remark that was made about an American hero, John McCain, and Trump should just come out and put it to rest and say, yeah, I don't like that remark. I've reprimanded the person who said it. We're sorry about it. Move on, drop it. If he doesn't move on, the White House press corps, which wants every little thing they can get on him, is just going to keep going at it over and over again because it'll show that Trump is a vulgarian and crude and insensitive. That's why they're doing it.
Well, he doesn't apologize at all. The only time he ever apologized was after the Access Hollywood tape. But Kelly Sadler is the White House aide. She supposedly called Meghan McCain, McCain's daughter, to apologize and supposedly told her, or at least that was the story, that she was going to publicly apologize, but that hasn't happened. Now, Meghan McCain was on The View.
People are going to have to answer for their own conscience. Mm-hmm. When you go on TV, I've never actually gone on TV and lied. I have that liberty in my life. And I think when you go on TV and you say things like this, your belief in right and wrong, people espouse a lot about God and living with values.
Yeah.
And when you say things like that, it's what you're going to have to live with.
I guess she's trying to take the high road in a way.
The only silver lining of all of this, including this horrific weekend and moment that my family's been having, is we have a platform to hopefully pivot this towards brain cancer research and helping especially children in need.
Well, yep. I give Meghan McCain some credit there.
Yeah, classy dame.
Taking the high road.
Unlike that woman in the White House.
So
said that.
Ask me anything.
Len, how are your knees holding up?
That's a great question.
Well, I'm just annoyed that Jordana Miller of ABC News keeps telling you that's a great question. I got to come up with some better questions. I guess I have to step up my game.
I am at my element when it comes to Middle Eastern politics. You should see me in a flak jacket when the war breaks out.
All right, coming up next. Oh, I'm looking forward to this. We have famed TV weatherman Spencer Christian. Remember him from Eyewitness News and Good Morning America?
He was on Good Morning America when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, he had to overcome some demons. He's written a book. Well, a big demon was gambling. How appropriate is that to talk
yes,
about
indeed.
Today? Oh, your next chance to the $1,000 is at 9:05, and Mark Simone coming up at 10 here on 710 WOR. Riverwalk is a premier independent living community overlooking the Hudson River, has luxury residential-style accommodations. Riverwalk is part of River Spring Health's Family of Care Solutions and is located at the beautiful Hebrew Home at Riverdale's lush 32-acre waterfront campus. Riverwalk's spacious modern apartments feature, get this, cafe-style meals, housekeeping, and concierge services. I've been to Riverwalk and witnessed older adults as they experienced life in a vibrant atmosphere. I've seen the residents participating in activities and programs, including art classes, live entertainment, dance, and music. Residents enjoy a renowned art collection and museum. They have cultural trips, and they're enriched through Riverwalk University courses, lectures, and current events classes. Find out more by calling them, 800-56-SENIOR. That's 800-56-SENIOR. Every aspect of the Riverwalk experience has been thoughtfully crafted around one central mission: to help your loved ones live forward each and every day. Call 800-56-SENIOR or go to riverspringhealth.org today.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, at 8:55 in the morning. Now, Len, when I was growing up, my mother was addicted to Good Morning America, and Spencer Christian, he was the weatherman. We got the weather from him every morning, and then one day he just was gone.
Well, I predate you, so Spencer, of course, worked at Channel 7 Eyewitness News.
Oh, before he made the big time in Good Morning America.
He was a weather guy. He also did some sports, so he knows his stuff. So
he does.
My friend Spencer Christian.
Well, he disappeared because he had a terrible gambling addiction, and he talks about that in his memoir, just out now. It's called You Bet Your Life, How I Survived Jim Crow Racism, Hurricane Chasing, and Gambling. It's out from Simon and Schuster, and Spencer joins us on the line now. Good morning, Spencer.
Good morning, Michael and Len. Good to be with you guys.
Hi, Spence.
Hey, Len, how you doing?
It's been a long time, pal.
It's been a long time.
And I have
time.
To tell you, I had no idea that you had this issue. Is this something you were able to mask from people?
Yeah, I was. I mean, people who knew me well, Len, knew that I was a high roller. I loved going down to Atlantic City, and I loved going out to Vegas. I think everyone who knew me, and certainly my colleagues at work, just thought it was my form of recreation. You know, I would get invited to all the VIP events and get the comp tickets to the Mike Tyson's fights, you know, stuff like that. No one knew the extent of it. They didn't realize how addicted I was and how much debt I was in and how much worry and guilt I was constantly dealing with, you know, how to cover the casino debt and all that stuff. It was a problem for nearly 30 years.
Spencer, they always say you can't come up until you've hit the bottom, the rock bottom. What was that bottom for you?
The bottom for me probably occurred when I left Good Morning America and moved out to KGO-TV in San Francisco. That's the ABC-owned station out there. So I left the national stage and moved back to local news, where I was making a lot less money, but I still had markers out at 14 casinos. I fell behind on income taxes. I eventually went through a bankruptcy. That was the low point for me. That was in the early 2000s.
We're on with Spencer Christian, former weatherman, co-host of Good Morning America. And Spencer, how timely today that the Supreme Court has okayed the states to initiate sports gambling. I'm sure you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, I'm okay with that because, I mean, why should one state, Nevada, be the only state where you can place a sports bet? So I'm okay with extending that right to other states or people in other states. But I would caution people who gamble because, you know, I got hooked on it. I know that everyone who gambles doesn't become an addict. Everyone who drinks doesn't become an alcoholic. But there is something seductive about the rush of gambling that can easily turn an innocent recreational gambler into a hardcore addict. And I would just caution people to try to maintain some self-control. But I would not want to restrict anyone's right to go place a bet.
Spencer, do you remember the first time you placed a bet, and did the excitement just grab you right then?
It did. I had that beginner's luck. First time I was in a casino when casino gambling opened up in Atlantic City in 1978 at Resorts International. I went down there to see what it was like to gamble in a casino, and right away, you know, all the stimuli were coming at me and all the ding, 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 ding sounds, and I had a little luck playing blackjack and won some money. Then my next trip to a casino was my first trip to Las Vegas the same year, 1978. Once again, I had a little bit of beginner's luck. I had bought all the books on card counting and, you know, the basic strategy and all that stuff. So I thought I knew enough to win most of the time. So that's what hooked me right away. And then the next thing I knew, I was playing in higher and higher stakes, getting the comps, getting the high roller treatment, which was just about as seductive as the action at the tables itself. Next thing I knew, I was in over my head.
Spencer Christian, I'm still broadcasting. I don't know what. I must be an addiction for me. So I'm still doing radio, and I'm doing a news.
Spencer, trust me.
Talk show, Spencer.
Trust me. I'm trying to wean him off the addiction to the mic.
So I'm still here. It's still kicking. So why are you not broadcasting somewhere? You sound great on the air, Spence.
No. Oh, I am. I'm now at the ABC affiliate in San Francisco. I'm still doing weather.
Oh, you're still there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and I'm in my 47th year in the business.
Wow.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So no, I still love what I'm doing and get a charge out of it every day. And in fact, I'm in town in New York right now to do an interview with Good Morning America about about my book.
Old Home Week for you.
Old Home Week. Yeah. So in the book, I weave together the three primary paths in my life. You know, the growing up a poor black kid in the Old South in the days of segregation and overcoming that, and then carving out a career in broadcasting that, at one point had me on national TV. And then, of course, that dark path of the gambling. And I write about how the three paths intersect and how they affect each other.
Well, Spencer, it's a riveting book. You Bet Your Life, How I Survived Jim Crow Racism, Hurricane Chasing, and Gambling by Spencer Christian. Spencer, thanks a lot for being our guest here on the Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the
Morning
Show.
Thank you, guys. Okay, good to hear your voice again, Len.
Well, great talking to you. Thanks, Spencer.
Take care.
He sounds great,
terrific.
I gotta say.
Yeah, so I apologize. I just assumed he had left broadcasting, was writing books. Nope, still going at it in San Francisco.
Went to a dark place, but now he's back. Hey, coming up next, more on the gambling. Governor Chris Christie joins us. He was all in favor of lifting the ban. We'll talk to him about how he feels about winning that one.
WOR.
And we're back pretty soon. We're going to be talking to former Governor Chris Christie, who is now an ABC News correspondent, contributor, I should say. He was in favor of legalizing gambling all these years, and the Supreme Court has delivered the goods to him yesterday. Gambling is now legal in the land. It'll be up to state legislatures to determine whether or not it'll be legal in each state. But it's federalism at work, and Chris Christie has a lot to celebrate this morning.
He was a big supporter. He's been very vocal about this. And as we know, they lost 8 times in lower courts. They finally got vindication from the Supreme Court. And now, apparently by Memorial Day, Monmouth Park will be ready with the first bet. I wonder if the governor will be first in line at the betting window.
To put down his marker with Joe Bartlett right behind him.
I'll be there. Don't worry.
Of course you will, Joe Bartlett. So that leads off our big three. Also, clashes in the Middle East. 62 Palestinians killed in the Gaza Strip as they've been clashing with Israeli military because the United States has moved its embassy officially to Jerusalem. I don't know, Len, and the intractable problems of the Middle East. So, and also, one thing that did not leak from the White House, Melania Trump went in to have surgery for some kidney problems.
Yeah,
and that was a
hopefully
surprise.
She's doing well. But hey, let's talk to the governor.
Let's
Come
go
on.
Right to the governor. Good morning, Governor Christie.
Good morning, Michael. Len, how you doing?
We're doing great. So how'd you celebrate?
Big smile on my face, Len. Big smile on my face. A great feeling of vindication. Nearly 7 years of litigation, over $8 million in legal fees, fighting the NFL, the Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, and the NCAA. And, you know, we finally got a court that really listened to the constitutional arguments. And when you have the highest court in the land say you're right and they're wrong, that's a good day.
Governor, were you always in favor of legalizing gambling, or were there a series of things you concluded that led you to this belief?
I was always in favor of legalizing sports gambling in the state. You know, the state has a long history of being able to effectively regulate gambling. We're the second state in the nation that allowed casino gambling. And then I had a referendum. I put it on the ballot to see what the people of New Jersey wanted. Overwhelmingly, they voted in favor of having sports gambling in our state, at our state's casinos and racetracks. And, you know, from then on, it was my mission to try to get it done for the people of the state. It took seven losses in lower courts and a lot of ridicule from some people who said it was a pipe dream and I was on a fool's errand. But that fool's errand ended up with a big victory for New Jersey yesterday.
Hey, Governor, what do you make, the sports leagues, as you mentioned, fought you tooth and nail, and now they all have their hands out looking for their cut. What do you think of that?
It's quite something. You know, I understand the leader of the Senate in New Jersey, Steve Sweeney, told the sports leagues he'd pay them the same fee that Nevada pays them right now.
Sure. Good deal.
You know, the fact is that they made us spend $8 million and delayed us from, you know, gathering tax revenues on this for nearly 7 years. And this integrity argument, I think, is just a bogus argument. Len, I mean, I think we know that $190 billion got bet last year illegally on sports in just the U.S. And to give you some kind of context where betting is legal in the U.K., they bet $20 billion legally last year. I mean, so we're talking about an enormous market here in the U.S., many more professional and college sports than in the U.K. And to think that there would be no problem with integrity with all that illegal betting, but there is regarding the betting if it's legal, to me, is crazy. And let's face it, the NFL is really hypocritical on this. Why do they release reports every Wednesday on injury status?
Yeah, we know. Obviously, for all those people gambling on the games.
We're on the line with former Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey. He's now an ABC News contributor. Governor Christie, no secret that the mob, the mafia, has long controlled gambling. Now, with these new laws, is this a way of going at the mob, of loosening their grip on this activity?
Absolutely. And wouldn't you much rather have it done in a legal, upfront, transparent, regulated way than have it being contributing to the mob's other activities in the state of New Jersey and in other places that are dangerous and violent? And
the money they make off of gambling helps to support those other enterprises. So I do think it'll decrease. It won't eliminate the amount of it won't eliminate illegal gambling, but it'll decrease it significantly. And hopefully in places like New Jersey, they'll wisely use the extra revenue for folks like seniors in our state and the disabled and others.
Well, that's the real question, Governor, because as some listeners have brought up, in fact, I just got an email from John wanting me to ask you this question. You know, they always said that the lottery would help education. And the general feeling is, well, where's all that money gone? Because education still seems to be struggling. So listener John wants to ask you, how much money has the school system received from the lottery on a yearly average? You know, that kind of thing.
Billions of dollars over the years. And the lottery itself, right now, it's been dedicated entirely to paying teachers. $1 billion a year that we generate, that's in profit from the lottery, is dedicated completely now to paying teachers. I got that bill passed for the next 30 years. That's directly paying New Jersey public school teachers $1 billion a year. So, you know, listen, New Jersey, I love the state. I was born here, raised here. It's a cynical place. They always think that what's being said is going to happen hasn't happened. But I'm glad to be able to answer John that every nickel of profit from the lottery in this past year, that was $1 billion, went to paying teachers in New Jersey.
Governor, any concerns at all that by legalizing gambling, you are going to be encouraging people's addictions? I mean, addictions that can destroy lives and families.
No question that that's always a concern about any activity has with it the potential for addictive behavior. But New Jersey has been a leader in this since we've been at it for 40 years. On every lottery ticket, on every advertisement regarding lottery or casino gambling,
It is required by the state to put the number for Gamblers Anonymous on there to encourage people to pursue help when they need it. Casinos play an active role also in monitoring this and stopping people from gambling who they believe have a problem and refer them to Gamblers Anonymous. And so, you know, I don't think this will make it any worse. Remember, as I said, Michael, $190 billion was bet illegally across this country on sports this past year. And so I just don't think this will increase the amount of gambling. I think it will just change where it's happening.
We're on with Governor Christie. We're going to take advantage of you since you're an ABC News contributor. I mean, there's so much to talk about aside from gambling. So congratulations on getting that through, that bill finally through the Supreme Court. But listen, what's the political – what's your general take? I'll throw a lot of names at you. Michael Cohen, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels, the White House, the criticism of John McCain. I mean, there's just so much going on. Just dive in wherever you want.
Well, first off, I think Michael Avenatti's 15 minutes of fame should be well past and over now.
Yes, I agree.
Let's just remember, so I don't know, and I said this to a few folks last night privately who continue to put him on the air. This is a lawyer who's representing a porn actress. Now, let's remember something. I hate when people call her a porn star. You know, I think you have to do something to become a star, and she's an actress. She's an actress in pornographic movies. He represents her, and that's his only claim to fame. Yet he's on television talking about, you know, issues of public policy. I think his 15 minutes of fame should be over. And without regard to what the merits are of the case between the president and Stormy Daniels, and I'm not commenting on that. I'm commenting on the fact that the media has an insatiable desire to have a guy like this on the air. And I read a study just yesterday or the day before that said just – the news, the electronic news media alone has given this guy $175 million worth of advertising. enough for it, yeah. Right? And so, you know, on that point, I feel strongly. On the Michael Cohen issue, obviously he's got some problems. And you know, for that kind of raid, I can tell you as a former U.S. attorney who was in charge of one of the largest offices in the country for 7 years in New Jersey, getting that kind of raid authorized is very difficult, and there is some serious allegations that they must have made with evidence to back it up to a federal judge in order to get that warrant signed. And so obviously, you know, Mr. Cohen has some real questions to answer. He's presumed innocent, as we all are in our system. But those are some ominous signs from the Southern District of New York regarding Mr. Cohen's future.
Governor, how do you think Rudy Giuliani is doing out there defending the president?
Listen, Rudy's out there being Rudy, right? He's out there fighting the fight, being brash, being bold. We've all seen this in Rudy Giuliani since the days that he was mayor of New York. I think that Rudy is getting his sea legs on this case, learning the case, and I think he'll do a very good job for the president. I know Rudy as a lawyer, and I know that Rudy was one of the best U.S. attorneys in Manhattan that they ever had. And I think he's going to do a very good job for the president. Now, the great thing for Rudy is that, you know, lawyers can't change facts. You got to deal with the facts as your client gives them to you. But I think in the context of all this, the president made a very good choice in hiring Rudy. He's scared of nothing or no one.
Should he get sacked, would you join the legal team?
No, I'm not. I'm not doing that kind of thing.
Oh, I'd pay to see that, Governor.
All right. Former Governor Chris Christie, now an ABC News contributor. Thanks a lot for joining us, Governor.
Thanks, Gov. Come back.
Len, Michael, happy to be on the show and look forward to being on again.
All right. Thanks, Governor.
Take care of yourself. Thanks a lot. Hey, when we get back, she's not a Wonder Woman, Len. She's an underwear woman. You can't believe this woman in her underwear, but she can wear her underwear, but she can't drive, apparently. She ran her car into a house in Queens. This is unbelievable. Plus your chance to win $1,000. So if you're saving up for something special, $1,000 in your bank account, that's going to be very helpful. And Mark Simone is at 10:05 on 710 WOR.
We're also going to have the great Michael Riedel book mystery coming up next. Wait till you hear this. This is a true story. We went straight from a long winter into the heat of summer. That's right, 88 degrees later today, and there was zero time to prepare. Thanks for the warning, Mother Nature. Now, the last thing you want to be doing when it's hot out is packing and schlepping your stuff into self-storage. So don't. Let MakeSpace do it for you. MakeSpace is the new way to store your things. Their team of professional movers come to you with free packing supplies. They pick up as little or as much as you want, and they move it into a safe and secure storage. You don't even have to remember what you packed, because with the MakeSpace app, you can see pictures of what you stored. You can request them to be delivered back with the click of a button. Deliver some of it, all of it, whatever you want back. They've made storage so simple. MakeSpace does it all. The packing, transporting, and storing, everything. Book before June the 30th, and MakeSpace will give you $100 off your first month at MakeSpace.com/Len. Only for the month of June. Get $100 off at MakeSpace.com/Len. That's MakeSpace.com/Len. And at 9:25, before we get to the lady driving her car in her brown panties, if you're a regular listener, you're tired of hearing me fetch. But a couple of weeks ago, Riedel and I said we're going to trade books. Both of us have had New York Times bestsellers. So we said the next day we're going to bring in autographed copies of our books and exchange them. So the next day I bring in Greatest Moments in Sports. I personally autographed him with
a
touching autograph saying he was my favorite co-host for the minute. And I gave him the book. And I've been waiting every single day. So I come in today, and here it is.
Ah.
A nice copy of Razzle Dazzle, The Battle for Broadway, Michael Riedel. That is a sharp-looking cover.
A hardcover copy. Like.
And he writes this great postcard to me. These last 11 weeks with you have been a joy. I hope you will enjoy my cherished and off-plugged book, Razzle Dazzle, as much as I've enjoyed your New York Times bestseller, The Greatest Moments in Sports, your current co-host, Riedel. He also sent me a beautiful bookmark.
Yep.
He's making up for it.
It turns out none of this came from him. it was one of our listeners.
I know, Bridget.
Sent it to me to cover for you. He said to me, "No, I have it on my counter." And you know what's worse? He said he was going to give me a soft cover book.
And you know what was worse? I actually texted him yesterday to remind him.
I forwarded your text to Bridget. And she went to the Strand and she got a hardcover copy of my book, and she said,
"Are you going
to
sign this hardcover?" It pisses me off, because now you got one more sale out of this.
I know. That's the best part.
You can autograph this.
Unbelievable.
Yes, I am going to autograph it, and I am going to bring you the paperback. This reminds me of a quick book story, though. So
Stuff your paperback.
I had to get a hardcover edition of my book, so I went to the Strand the other week. I wanted to give it as a gift to a friend,
right?
And I'm out of hardcovers, so I went to the Strand, and there were a couple. I picked it up. I opened the book up. It was a hardcover copy of my book that I had autographed to a friend of mine who had taken it and sold it at the Strand.
Sold it back to the Strand?
He resold my book. I gave him this book free.
Now,
I signed it for him, and he went right to the Strand, and he sold it.
Not smart.
Just bought it back.
Your friend wasn't smart, because all you have to do is rip out that page. They don't know.
Oh, right. Yes, you tear off the front page.
You tear off the front page.
Well, I know this about my friend.
Speaking of Broadway, got this email this morning, and you can email this directly at our website, 710WOR.com/Len and Michael. This is from James. I heard Michael mention the Broadway musical version of Some Like It Hot is coming to Broadway, but did Michael realize it was once adapted into a musical back in 1972 and was called Sugar? It had music by Julie Stein, lyrics by Bob Merrill, a book by Peter Stone. It starred Robert Morris, Tony Roberts, and Elaine Joyce. It ran 505 performances at the Majestic Theater, a little Broadway razzle-dazzle for Michael.
James is absolutely right, and had I had more time,
you
I would have mentioned
about it.
I know, and I can add this, James, if you're listening, here's a little bit of Broadway trivia for you. The book, the script was by Peter Stone, but the producer, David Merrick, did not like Peter Stone's book, so he brought in Neil Simon to rewrite Peter Stone's book.
That was a big time cast,
huge
producers,
Tony Roberts,
writers.
Absolutely.
Robert Morris was huge on Broadway.
Yeah.
And 505 performances. Well, that's
not
bad.
It was a B.
Almost 2 years.
It was a B-list show. It was not a great show. It was a B-list show, not really revivable, and has to be reworked by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman.
Was James your ghostwriter for Razzle Dazzle? Because he seems to really know a lot.
He does. Good for James. No,
he and Bridget, they know too much. All right,
that's right.
How about the brown panty lady?
I know. Three people were injured when an SUV slammed into a home in Queens on Monday. Witnesses say the driver, a woman, was wearing only her underwear. The crash happened on Baisley Boulevard in Rochdale Village just before 1 p.m. with a car slamming through a garage of a vacant home and knocking a hole in the wall of a neighboring bedroom with three people inside, Len.
She only had a bra and panties on. That was a little awkward.
It was a little awkward.
I would say
that's
so.
The eyewitness said, yeah, it was a little, she was only wearing her brown panties.
She went straight through the back over here, and when she came out like a spinning top, man. Like she was crazy or whatever, man. And she came out, and this guy grabbed her, and she had on like a tank top, I think, with some panties on.
No, so the guy that said this, now I'm looking at the notes here.
She only had a bra and panties on. That was a little awkward.
All right. So that was awkward. That was witness Jor-El Ramsey. Wasn't Jor-El, was that Superman's name? No, huh?
No, Jor-El was Superman's dad's name. Jor-El.
This guy's name is Jor-El.
Jor-El. Ooh.
All ties in.
Keep the kryptonite away from him.
Yeah.
Poor woman. Well, I have a feeling some more details will be about her state of mind while she was driving in her bra and panties will emerge, don't you think
she
so,
Lynn? She was 29 years old. Charges are pending. I assume one of them will have to be DUI, but that's just a guess.
Right, and driving while
under the influence or while whatever.
No,
the law
no,
is
no.
DUI is under the influence. While intoxicated is DWI.
What's driving while undressed? DWU.
DWU.
DWU. Yeah.
You would be familiar with that one.
I don't drive with that. Well, actually, I have driven without.
Here it comes. Without what?
I had a bathing suit that I had to take off for a particular reason.
What?
Wait a second. You whoa. Drove. Whoa.
I drove commando once.
You drove in your birthday suit?
I drove commando. I
thought it was probably shrinkage for
me. Well, I would know how to operate a stick shift.
Whoa, just baby. Was it hard?
No. Len, you don't need to kill the joke.
All right.
Good morning, everybody, at 9:41, and I bet you know this song. Can you read my mind? The love theme from Superman, that great movie from the 70s with Christopher Reeves. And Margot Kidder, who played Lois Lane, and she has died at 69. And we want to pay tribute to a really fine actress who made an indelible impression on us all as Lois Lane with 710 AM WOR Movie Minute host Joe Neumeier. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, guys. Oh, I love that theme, that score, that John Williams score. That Superman movie, the original, is my favorite superhero movie, and a lot of it is due to Margot Kidder. Such a sad loss. She is sort of, you know, we're now in the era of superhero movies. We talk about them all the time. But she was sort of the godmother in a lot of ways to what a lot of these movies try to be, the soul, the heart. You know, her scenes in Superman with Christopher Reeve still resonate. They're still fun. They're still romantic, and there's so much to them. I mean, we all know that great line as she's falling from the
helicopter. Wait a second.
Hold on,
Wait a second, Joe.
Easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me. Who's got you?
Classic. Absolutely classic.
But you know what I thought was so skillful about her performance in those movies was she plays Lois Lane, and she's a feminist, and she's on her own, and she's getting all the scoops, and she survives in a man's world. But then she could just really touch your heart by showing the vulnerable, romantic side of the character.
Exactly right. And one wouldn't work without the other. You know, she's spunky, and she's cute, and she's sort of got that croaky voice. But if you didn't see her being so tough and abrasive, those moments when she's sweet, like in that scene when they're flying over New York City in 1978, it wouldn't work as well. And I think that, you know, what she did as Lois Lane, a lot of actresses now maybe tried. Rachel McAdams, who's also Canadian, sort of has the same kind of thing a little bit. But what she did as Lois Lane is really kind of make you feel like this fantasy, this superhero thing, is grounded in the real world. And I think that her performance has definitely got that to it. It also has a great 70s feel to it, which she was very important to the filmmaking community of the 1970s. She had a house on the Pacific Coast Highway in California that all the filmmakers of that era, Scorsese, Spielberg, De Palma, who she dated, they all went to. And I think you see that in her performance. There's an element to the era in Superman and its sequels that you really can't beat. And that's a mixture of the actress and the role and the performance and the time. It's really she was really terrific in that movie.
Obviously, she was more than just Lois Lane. She did do many other movies, but also the very public battle with bipolar disorder.
Yeah, and that was so sad. But she did. She was outspoken about it in a lot of ways. She didn't hide it. When that kind of episode happened in like the mid '90s, it was people. I remember the we were talking at the time at the magazines that I worked at and at the newspapers. People were saying, she's sort of become this sort of crazy kind of figure. But really, she was dealing with something that a lot of people deal with, and she was very open about it. And then in the new century, in like 2005, 2006, she was open about it again. So I think that, and I think she was so relatable. I think people could really relate to her as a person, relate to her as Lois Lane, that when she was dealing with those issues of mental health later on in life, she really dealt with it bravely.
Joe, yeah. She didn't have quite the career I thought she should have had. Was it not only because of the bipolar struggles, but also was she typecast as Lois Lane? Was that such an indelible performance that she couldn't get out from under it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Michael. I think it's that. Plus, I think that she was such a specific type of actress. Later films she did, there was a few that, you watch them all. I saw them all in the early 80s, one with Richard Pryor called Some Kind of Hero. There was a kind of a detective comedy called Trenchcoat. She was really good in an HBO movie called The Glitter Dome.
Oh, yeah.
With James Garner from the early 80s. I think she was a very specific type of actress. It's funny because you would think, when you first hear her or see her as Lois Lane, you think, this isn't who we sort of think of as Lois Lane, classic Lois Lane. But she sort of became that role. Then you sort of think, then she really couldn't do anything else, and nothing she got really fit her, and none of those movies of the era fit her. And then also, of course, the movies of the 1980s became a different type of thing. So while she kind of came at the cusp of the end of the 70s and brought that to Lois Lane, the 80s performances and 80s roles and movies didn't really fit her that well. Yeah.
Well, Margot Kidder passing away at 69, and it strikes me that the tribute she's receiving about her acting and her career, did she receive these kudos during her lifetime, or is this only coming out now? Now that she's died,
I think it's come to only now that she's died. I think she did see people relate to Lois Lane, and people sort of comment on that movie because the movie was such a huge success and did sort of start this new era of superhero movies, though it took a while for it to foment. But I think she saw a lot of appreciation from the movie making community who got into the superhero movies. I think she got a lot of love from fans. But she was living in a ranch in Montana. She had like difficulty getting roles. She did some TV things. I don't think she really got the appreciation as she deserved, and it's sad.
And Joe, why I love that first Superman movie? Because it's filmed in New York City, and
that's
you can
right.
see the city before it was turned into Beverly Hills and Disney World. You can see the city when it was gritty and tough.
That's right, which she really personifies. Yep, that's at the old Daily News building on 42nd Street is where the Daily Planet was supposed to be. And she really personifies a certain specific type of New York character in the late 1970s. I totally agree. It's old New York, and she really personifies that beautifully. Totally agree.
Hey, Joe, come back on Friday. We want to hear all about Deadpool 2. So how's that sound?
The new generation of superhero movies, exactly. We'll be talking Deadpool 2 on Friday, guys. Right, good.
That'll be 9:40. See you then, Joey.
All right. 710 WOR's Movie Minuteman, Joe Neumeier. Thanks a lot, Joe. So coming up next, Popeye the Sailor Man, he had tattoos, right?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Well, now there's a mom who got a tattoo, but there's a typo in the tattoo.
This story.
She's got to rub it away.
You got to hear this story. That's all I'm going to say.
Hilarious.
This is an incredible story. And at 9:53 and change, coming up at the top of the hour is Mark Simone. We have some interesting folks lined up the rest of the week. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to an author, David Itzkoff. He wrote the book on Robin Williams. Did you see that book? It's an encyclopedia.
I did, yes. I know David. He's a reporter over at the New York Times, a very good writer, and he really had a lot of cooperation with friends and family of Robin Williams. And Robin Williams was the classic case of the funny man who is completely torn apart inside, struggling with a lot of demons, and in the end, we know he killed himself.
Yeah, what a sad, sad story. But this should be an interesting interview tomorrow. And then on Thursday, in the studio, live and in Poison,
The Mooch,
Anthony Scaramucci. And isn't there a lot to talk about? I want to hear about the leaking at the White House.
Yes, I do, too. And also, we'll be ramping up to the royal wedding, even though Len and I are like, who cares? But
Natalie, I care more than you.
You don't care.
Yeah, I do.
No, you don't.
But I won't wake up at 4 o'clock to watch
care.
It. No,
but
I do.
But Natalie
She seems cute. They seem like a cute
Meghan
couple.
Martha, yeah. Natalie keeps us on point because she knows there's a lot of interest in the royal wedding, what they're going to be wearing, what her hat's going to look like, what her shoes are going to be.
She's probably not going to be wearing a hat. She's going to be wearing a tiara.
Oh, a tiara. Because she's not really a queen yet, because she's got to knock a few people off before she can get to the throne.
Yeah, I'm not too sure her royal title will be, but...
Consort.
Oh, I read it somewhere with her royal title. Royal Highness of something. I don't know. I did read it.
Well,
but she's not officially a princess.
No. Yeah.
But I did see somewhere where it's, and everyone asks what's Harry's last name, and you never hear these people. They really don't have a last name.
They do, actually, and I can't remember. It's, yeah, a, it's sort of a German type thing.
Mont, what's the second half is the Mont, whatever.
And the Montebach Carlos.
Whatever.
Sternheim Montebach Carlos, the second names, or third, right, or fourth. Yeah,
hey, you've heard of tattoo fails. You know, they spell things wrong on a tattoo or something.
Typo tattoos.
This, Natalie, I guarantee you're going to love this one. This is in Sweden. A lady by the name of Joanna Sandstrom decides to have a tattoo of her two children's names. So she has Nova and Kevin.
Okay.
She gets home, and instead of Nova and Kevin, it's Nova and Kelvin. So.
Oh, poor Kevin.
Well, there's more. Wait till you hear this one.
Hold on. So Kelvin.
Kelvin. K-E-L-V-I-N. Instead of Kevin.
So how can we get the L away?
Well, that, here's the deal. So she said, she broke down in tears. She said her heart stopped. She went right back to the tattoo parlor, and the guy laughed because she said, hey, I showed you the designs. You approved them. I guess she didn't proofread it very well. He did give her a refund, handed her the phone to call a tattoo removal clinic. They said it would take several treatments to remove it. So what did they do? They renamed Kevin their son Kelvin.
No.
Truce.
How old is this kid?
Is that classic?
Are you kidding me?
I don't know how old he is. But now their son is Kelvin. She said, you know, they thought about it. They said, well, it's a unique name. The name had kind of grown on them. Ha ha. The name had grown on them, and they renamed Kevin Kelvin, and now problem solved. She has
problem
a tattoo
solved.
Of her two kids.
Everybody in Sweden has a tattoo on their left buttock. You know what it says?
Here it comes. What?
ABBA.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. If you're really? Born in Sweden, you get branded with ABBA.
Just why the left buttock?
I don't know.
That's not true.
Because on the right buttock, it says Dancing Queen.
You really think it's true? Come on.
Weird but true. If you're born in Sweden, you're branded with an ABBA on your left buttock.
Kevin is now Kelvin. Good thing your mom didn't get a tattoo by mistake that said Michelle.
Well, I was named after my grandfather, and his name was Michel because he was French.
Oh, okay.
So there you are, then. Now you know even more about me.
Yeah,
too much. So here's a brawl at a water park in Wisconsin. It's during Mother's Day. Everyone's out celebrating Mother's Day.
That's what you do on Mother's Day.
That's where you go to a water park. Right. No, but they're at the water park. They're having a good time, and all of a sudden somebody took a chair. One family took a chair from some other family's table, and this
it's so annoying when that happens.
Out. People started throwing chairs, garbage cans, food. Police were called. Charges are likely to be filed against the Hatfields and the McCoy of the Mount Olympus Water Park.
Now, I don't know how Mother's Day was at your house, but maybe it sounded something like this.
Better than this, I'll tell you.
Oh. All right. So they're throwing chairs and tables?
Everything. Anything that wasn't nailed down, garbage pails,
did they
chairs.
Did they pick up those logs that you ride in down the water park?
The flume, ride?
They were throwing flumes at each other?
You got to see this video. Just Mother's Day at the water park.
Oh, my God.
Go to our website, 710WOR.com/LennonMichael. Any charges? Anybody arrested?
Charges are pending. They say that charges are likely. Lake Delton police in Wisconsin anticipate filing charges.
All right, here's my dumb crook of the week. This is at a rural county in Ohio. There's a policeman investigating phone scams.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a call from the phone scammer trying to scam him. So this phone scammer claims, oh, I'm from Bulbashers Clearinghouse. You've won $950,000 and a brand new Mercedes. Just needed some private information. So the cop says, oh, that's the one with Ed McMahon, right? And the scammer said, oh, yeah, right. McMahon's been dead,
been
for,
dead for 20 years.
So they arrested this clown. He's trying to pull a scam, and he calls the policeman who's investigating the scam.
Ah, well, that's just bad luck.
That's going to do it for us, Michael Riedel. Thanks for the book. Appreciate it.
Yes.
You missed anything today, check out 710WOR.com/LennonMichael.